Denise and Nigel for organizing this call today and to the committee itself, and of course all of you who are joining us. So I'm interested to see what happens as you answer the survey questions, and what I'm going to do is pepper my talk with your responses and announce the results as we go through. So let me begin. So not a day goes by without a news item, a Google alert, a professional journal article, or other information source having content with terminology like sustainability, accountability, diversity, inclusion, social impact, sustainability disclosures, ESG metrics, the human right to development, or naming new entities such as the UN Global Compact. We even read dramatic statements such as corporate social responsibility is dead, as said by Peter Baker, the president and CEO of the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. And if you follow the investment news as I do, you've been entertained by the ongoing conversation spawned by the 2018 letter to CEOs from Larry Fink, the chair of the investment firm of BlackRock. He was admonishing companies to do more than make profits. He really meant make a positive contribution to society, and that he planned to hold them to account. Now, Mr. Fink, I think, captured the difference between corporate social responsibility and accountability in his letter. And that is that no longer is corporate responsibility voluntary. Indeed, it's becoming obligatory, and for which companies will be held to account. Now, if you're not a sustainability accountability geek like I am, your eyes probably glaze over as mine did when I first read these terms and about these concepts. I won't define sustainability at all today, as there is just no settled definition, but it has some edges to it. I'll discuss the Sustainable Development Goals in a few moments and give you a handle on the term, because everyone is using it. Also, when I first heard about the subject, I also thought, oh, human rights. Great aspirational stuff, but I work towards getting health systems and procedures up and running. Sure, in the end of the day, when I get a health system humming, human rights are met, or at least more than before. But then I was retained by the UN initiative called the Every Woman, Every Child Initiative, Independent Accountability Panel, that had selected private sector accountability for its 2018 report. As I dug in, I became fascinated by what I see as a definitive change in what CSR is to what I now call corporate social accountability, and how companies are addressing their response. I found this a challenge as a lawyer because I'm pretty left-brained. I'm logical. I'm trained to consider evidence, fit it into some statutory or common law construct, etc. But this is an area calling for some right-brain thinking that is innovative and even random, because the rules are in formation and we are not yet clear on what they are or will be. There are trends indeed, and as lawyers, the trend towards law is most critical to follow. That's hard law. But today I hope to provide some background on how all this happened, what's on the docket now, and where this is likely to lead, and what companies and their counsel might seriously consider now. So before I do that, let's consider some evidence that companies around the world are taking this very seriously. More than 9,000 companies have signed onto the Global Compact, a set of 10 principles widely considered to capture the basic elements of sustainability, demonstrating that many companies are convinced of the business case around sustainability. And some of these companies include Welltower, General Motors, Bank of America, Visa, Lockheed Martin. These companies have made sustainability a corporate priority. There were very early adopters of sustainability, such as Ken Langone, the Home Depot co-founder. He wrote a book called I Love Capitalism. And reflecting on the state of inequality in the world, he said, it's up to capitalists to make sure the tide does indeed lift all boats. That company boasts how it treats its employees, even making some of them millionaires. While it's nice to get on a list and sign on to the Global Compact or other similar lists, lots of companies are also putting their money on the line. According to Achim Steiner, the UN Development Program Director General, he says that 26% or nearly $23 trillion of all investment in North America, Europe, and Asia are being managed now under environmental, social, and governance standards, or ESG, as you may have heard. And I will continue to use that as the shorthand. ESG is also an asset management style for investors. Not surprisingly, Europe leads the way, but in Asia, less than 1% of investment falls under ESG. So even though there are 9,000 signatories to the Global Compact, obviously these are not all the companies in the world. So let's turn to our first survey question, where the question is your firm addressing how it will address new social obligations, such as those named in the Sustainable Development Goals? And 100% of those that responded answered no. No one answered yes. So if you haven't answered that question yet, please do, as those of you who are joining the call, and we'll see if those numbers change as we go through. So what's the evidence that companies are not taking this seriously? So if you answered no to the survey question, you're not alone. You're in good company because Warren Buffett, the chairman of Berkshire Hathaway, who pushed against the notion long espoused by economists, Milton Friedman, that a company's only social responsibility is its profits. Another survey shows that half the business community sees the Sustainable Development Goals as government territory. Yet, all of us know as lawyers that we have lots of cases of corruption, fraud, SEC and labor violations, discrimination, pollution, harassment, and others. So surely business has some role here. But what's the source of the shift of corporate social responsibility to accountability? And what is this transition? According to corporate social responsibility scholars, that subject has been in a constant state of evolution since as early as the 1800s, if not sooner, earlier. Its scope has remained voluntary for the most part, leaving companies to decide what each company will do. Companies have engaged in philanthropy and community service and other things, but this is changing. An example now is a requirement in India that companies dedicate a percentage of income to social causes. This is a step in the direction of accountability, but it's really limited to companies writing a check. So for the most part, it's easy to understand. But through more recent developments, and by this I refer to the mix of sustainable development goals and human rights, to which I now call global social goals, companies are expected to undertake activities related to these goals, even if they are not within the core business. And companies are also being measured on their uptake and integration of these new social goals. So what are the Sustainable Development Goals, and what human rights am I talking about? The SDGs, or Sustainable Development Goals, stem from the movement and global commitments agreed to by countries in 1992, at the UN Conference on Environment and Development, also called the Rio Summit. By the year 2000, we had our first set of goals, the Millennium Development Goals, and since the world did not meet them by 2015, we then moved onward to the Sustainable Development Goals, which the UN General Assembly adopted, also calling these the 2030 Agenda, giving us 15 years in which to meet the 17 goals. Now, within the goals, there's a clear reference to human rights concepts, in addition to goals that reflect best practices we've identified in the fields of health, education, sanitation, innovation, and even rule of law is one of the goals. Importantly, the role of business or corporations became explicit within the SDGs, unlike the MDGs. And one goal, for example, is about partnership between government, civil society, and the private sector. No time was lost since those goals were written before a number of principles for business, such as the Global Compact and the UN Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights, among others, were developed. All of these remain non-binding legally, but that is changing. So let's look at our second question here, and that is, which of the Sustainable Development Goals is most relevant to the legal profession? And we have goal 16, being the one where 75% of respondents answered that is it, and 25% said that all goals were important. There's really no right or wrong answer there. My personal view is that all the goals are important to the legal profession. Perhaps we all, as lawyers, pay more attention to goal 16 because that's about rule of law. And that's true. But it's also about strong institutions, government institutions and others, which are primarily responsible for the implementation of the goals. And of course, the rule of law, as all of us know, is critical to whether government performs its duties and how civil society and industry reacts with it. Now, in addition to the global social goals, there are other influences that are taking us to the point where many of the goals, which were initially designed to be the responsibility of governments, are now seen as a responsibility of companies, fully or partially. And even if some of these are not yet in law, there are several influences that cause me to conclude that companies need to pay heed. First of all, governments are failing all over the world to provide basic services to the people. The status quo for many people on the planet is not improving, and so people naturally turn to others, and that is the private sector. Just one bit of data suggests the gravity of the situation for many on Earth. So, for example, for the first time in more than a decade, there are approximately 38 million more hungry people in the world, and many of them live in rich countries like the United States. Thought leaders, again, Larry Fink comes into the story here, describe the influences as a result of unemployment improving across the globe, which certainly has happened. And he rightly predicts, as far as I'm concerned, that workers or employees, not just shareholders, can and will have a greater say in defining a company's purpose, priorities, and even the specifics of its business. And this will only grow as millennials and even younger generations occupy increasingly senior positions in business. A survey by Deloitte asked millennials what businesses should try to achieve, and 63% of respondents answered improve society, and that was chosen over generate profit. There's already evidence on the power of employees to change corporate behavior. Recall, for example, when Google employees walked out over an alleged culture of sexual harassment and in opposition to Google doing work for the Defense Department on artificial intelligence. The voice of civil society is now amplified by social networks, and people are informed by the Internet. They know, for example, that there are different ways projects can be managed, and this need not be at their expense. Investors also have a say in all of this. Going back to the 80s, we had the first socially responsible investment fund, Calvert, which is based here in Bethesda, Maryland. But now, so many years later, it's just one of a long list of ESG-graded funds. And investors have learned how to barrage companies and their CEOs about purpose and morality, almost to the exclusion of rigorous financial analysis, as bemoans Barron's recently. Now, before I go on, I want to address human rights. This is by no means a talk on human rights, but the global social goals and various principles within them and elsewhere are rooted in and intertwined with the concepts of human rights and universal principles on labor, the environment, anti-corruption, and others. Now, you're all familiar with the main human rights doctrines, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the two covenants or treaties, the one on civil and political rights and the one on economic, social, and cultural rights. Now, since the 40s, when these were drafted and subsequently ratified, there is history with their application through the courts and elsewhere, and understanding and amplification of their meaning. So the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights are an example of how these human rights are being applied and being amplified. But one human right you may not be aware of is that of the right to development. It is one of the many, such as the right to health, work, free movement and association, etc. But in 1986, the UN declared the right to development. This right is of particular importance to the translation of global social goals in the evolution of corporate social responsibility to corporate social accountability and hard law at national, regional, and global levels. So let's consider a few of the laws and the draft treaty on human rights in transnational corporations, which is where the right to development will start to become very important for companies to pay attention to, as that treaty, if that treaty becomes a treaty, if the draft moves forward. And there's all likelihood that it will, by the way, in my read of the situation. So even before the SDGs were settled, there was an EU directive in 2014 requiring companies to prepare a non-financial statement containing information for an understanding of the company's development, performance, position, and impact relating to, at a minimum, environmental matters, social and employee-related matters, respect for human rights, anti-corruption, and bribery. In 2015, the UK Modern Slavery Act went into effect. It requires commercial organizations doing business in the UK with a revenue of over £36 million to publish a statement on the measures taken to address the risks of slavery and trafficking. In the EU Foreign Affairs Council on Business and Human Rights called on all business enterprises, both transnational and domestic, to comply with the UN Guiding Principles, the ILO Tripartite Declaration, and the OECD Guidelines by integrating human rights due diligence into their operations. And at last count, that was in 2016, and at last count, 15 EU member states have adopted national action plans on business and human rights. March 2017, France enacted the Duty of Vigilance Law, which requires companies headquartered in France and those operating there with at least 5,000 employees to establish mechanisms to prevent human rights obligations and environmental impacts, not only in their own production facilities, but throughout their subsidiaries and companies under their control, and to report these mechanisms each year. And this year, Australia put its own modern slavery bill into force. Even here in the United States, the state of California, which is the world's fifth largest economy, they say, passed a law in 2018 requiring public companies with headquarters in the state to have at least one female board member by 2020, those with five directors at least two by 2021, and those with six or more, three. Now, as I mentioned a little while ago, the most worrisome development, in my view, is the draft treaty on transnational corporations and human rights, which is currently moving through the UN process. It contains provisions enabling justiciable claims against transnational corporations for violation of human rights. And recall this right to development, leading us right back to the Sustainable Development Goals, which are all about development. Now, on top of this trend towards hard law, there's a lot of measuring going on, and there are tools based on measuring sticks to encourage companies to change their behavior towards the concepts of ESG or sustainability, which unfortunately are still ill-defined and for which there are not yet robust, reliable measures. While social and environmental might be easier to understand, the terms governance and sustainable remain a mystery, and certainly the term sustainable doesn't really have a definition that's constant across users of the term. The indicators that are used by various companies that are measuring are not fully transparent, and it's not clear whether these indicators are specific to the activities that actually support the SDG goals. So I'm not really sure how companies would then determine for themselves how their activities would support SDG goals so that they could be accurately measured in terms of what they're doing. And there's certainly no effort to harmonize these standards across all of the organizations that are now in what is a new little niche business to measure what companies are doing. Nonetheless, there's a glut of platforms and this growing niche business, and they have names like the Global Reporting Initiative, the World Benchmarking Alliance are just two. And within the World Benchmarking Alliance, you'll see a number of organizations that have their own little separate scoring systems going on. These are organizations that are providing reporting platforms, self-measuring indices, and other services, of course, to guide you on how to go about doing all of this. Companies, information companies like Thomson Reuters, and market platforms such as the Dow Jones Sustainability Index have been developing indicators of sustainability and leadership and methods to evaluate companies on these ESG factors. Others are more specific, such as Go Green for the Environment, the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark for Real Estate, and even for your heart, the American Heart Association has the Workplace Achievement Index for companies taking steps to build a culture of health. Now, in this gold rush atmosphere to measure, in my view, companies run the risk of merciless measurement, a phrase I coined to describe what I think is a predicament. And I see this predicament for companies for the near and medium term. The metrics are young, but have improved and will become more mainstream and robust as various companies continue their work. The issues are complex and require new tools for sure, and other approaches to fully appreciate the depth and diversity of the impact companies are making. Even the results will be controversial and force managers to make different and new choices. I feel like I should write a book called SDGs for Dummies, or maybe even develop a new 12-step program on recovery from merciless measurement. So what's a company to do? I think there's a number of steps that begin with, of course, acknowledging, which you're really doing today by joining this call, that this is an area to be considered and integrated into day-to-day operations. There is a path for each company, depending on your industry and where you are in your corporate development, but to find that path will require some deliberation, and that path will surely evolve over time. Second, again, as you're doing today, you know, we need to understand the relevance of this broader topic of sustainability and how specific SDGs and other social norms and principles fit within our offices as lawyers, because we're responsible to do this in our firms as well, and or within our client business. Then, of course, we have to implement these things. We have to implement these sustainability notions and goals into company strategy and find ways to create value, shareholder value, community value, however you define your community, and in your operations for which of the goals your company can make an impact on and what this looks like from the boardroom to the loading dock. We need to really also think about new reporting systems. I call them accountability systems, so that whatever goals you have selected, you can find ways to measure them. And this is essential because you are going to be asked and you are being asked to report your results to a wider audience than ever before. Thus, the fifth step I see is to make decisions on what to report, to whom to report, when and how. And of course, for publicly traded companies, that really means looking at how that interacts with your securities obligations. It's no longer a matter of reporting just to Wall Street or shareholders. We have a much wider audience of consumers, customers, suppliers, civil society, and the media, and all of those reporting companies that have self-identified as standard bearers. Others as well, like Oxfam, are watching and measuring, and they will score you badly. So just ask the companies who were scored in the Oxfam report of last year. And as for any strategy, it's essential to review your progress, check in frequently, because these goals are stable, I think, until 2030, but since we didn't meet the first set of goals, the MDGs, by 2015, and the progress so far towards 2030 suggests we won't meet them by 2030 either, there'll be another set of goals, or these goals will be expanded and refined going forward. So we have to constantly check our progress against what we've decided to do and against what's going on in this global goals arena. And finally, I would suggest we all participate in the conversation and the development of the goals and metrics for our industry segments, and either directly or through industry associations such as the ABA or even this committee. So let's look at the results of Question 3, I would like more programming on this topic and thank you all very much. 100% of you who answered said yes. So there's a thought for us, Denise. Anyway, in conclusion, this is an evolving story. I can speculate this is an inflection point in the long simmering argument over the state of global capitalism, but at a minimum, I think we are renegotiating the role of corporations, and that's going to change the law around corporations. Clearly, as lawyers, our obligation is to guide our clients to reduce the risk of hard legal liability. But given the weight of the global social goals and the trend towards hard law, I believe we have an obligation to guide our clients on how they will address them, even before they become law. We could be trailblazers like the Larry Finks of the world, but I think that takes a lot of effort. So maybe just being responsible global citizens is right and enough. So I want to thank you all for listening, and